first got in, I mean, there was a lot of, well, it depends. I mean, like, I went to a larger national firm. The smaller firms, I'm still seeing that they struggle with women, in at least in the office side of things, definitely out in the field supervision or in the laborers, electricians or carpenters. Definitely, I see that in the smaller firms. And I see that in certain states, certain parts of the country.
Welcome to Financially Savvy in 20 Minutes, a podcast hosted by me, Natalie Torres-Haddad, an international award-winning author, two-time TEDx speaker, and investor, along with Vera Egli, an investor, sales and marketing pro, and multi-language podcaster. We will share the tips and tricks from interviews with self-made entrepreneurs, leaders, and those who have attained financial freedom while learning financial literacy in multiple languages. Welcome to Financially Savvy in 20 Minutes. And I am Natalie Torres-Haddad with Miss Vera, who's Vera. Writing. if you're watching this video, that happens. We take our notes and then it's like, oh, you're cute, right? Today, we actually have someone who is a dear friend of mine. And I want to say old school friend of mine because we go way back from our teenage years in high school. Went to Bishop Montgomery and Torrance, woohoo, shout out to them. And we were on the dance team together. Oh my God, to think about all these things that we were on retreats, student council. We did it all together. And our parents are good friends as well. And we went off our college ways, but when we came back, we reconnected, I want to say, when we were close to 30. And that's another project you and I can talk about a little bit too. And reconnected again, 40. So I'm super impressed with her journey because not only have I seen her where she's come from, but dominating a field in that's usually male dominated, excuse me, as an architecture, and just the work that she does. And obviously she also happens to be Latina, so which is another plus. It's like seeing more women of color in these fields are just such a high moment for us. And Vera and I, that's all we talk about is like, who else can we talk about the unicorn, right? So enough. I would love for her to introduce herself, but first, Bernadette Reyes McDermott, thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Yay.
Before you tell us a little about your journey, I'd like to start off with the question we ask others is, do you remember the first time that you got paid that just made you make you feel different about money? Just kind of thinking, ooh, there's some opportunities or possibilities with this.
Well, yes, a very complex question. Like the first time I got paid, I would say it was my very first job. And okay. I did not have a high school job. I did not have a summer job or anything like that. For whatever reason, I decided my first job, I wanted to be an intern, or work at a paid internship at an architecture firm. And granted, it was minimum wage, but it was my first roadmap into my profession. So I was like, that's when I saw, okay, I got paid for what I'm doing. This is pretty cool. But the real first time I saw that there was an opportunity for that is when I actually changed careers from architecture to general construction. Ooh, I don't know, over 10 years? No. Over 10 years, between 10 and 15 years when I got paid a better salary. And I was like, my mind was blown because just changing professions and a adjacent field, so to speak, there was a huge difference. And that was eye-opening for me.
I love that. And for those that aren't familiar with, architecture, the field of it, you obviously just touched a point, is the change in salary, right? That's just a huge thing for you. It allows you to have more opportunities, invest more, and obviously change around. Vera and I have been talking about New Year's resolutions and just kind of the things that are changing in 2022. Have you seen any habits that have changed for you as far as when that increase happened? Like, what have you done differently, or have you done the same with your money?
Interestingly enough, the very first thing I was doing is, okay, how do I save money? When I first entered the career of architecture, I was getting paid $18 an hour, which is architecture is the lowest paid white collar profession out there. And what I've learned, unlike some other white collar professions, like being a lawyer or being a doctor, everyone has to negotiate their starting salary. So I found out another fellow architect, just as an accredited architecture program as mine, male, white, was making $2 more an hour.
Wow. Right?
So that was a huge thing for me. It's like, well, for me, I had to make some compromises, live at home, commute, figure something out, like to save money. So I started saving money as quickly as I can early on. Obviously that disparity, even I didn't find that acceptable because we both graduated from honors, both reputable universities, and arguably mine was a higher ranked program. And still, this is where I was at. The biggest thing for me after that was I actually switched going into professions. It was like when I realized the equity disparity in architecture, especially for minority women, I decided, like, okay, let me go into construction. I know there'll be more opportunities there and more exposure. And during that time, from a financial standpoint, I was not only saving, but I was setting aside some money so I could actually buy real estate. And I started buying maybe like basic like apartments and condos in up and coming cities. So I actually went out of state. I went to Austin, I went to Cleveland, I went to Pittsburgh, areas where are booming right now. But back then, wow, no one could do that. So my return on investment was bigger. And as soon as I started seeing that the economy started to change, like in 2007, 2008, I started selling my properties. And most people wanted to keep it. I decided to sell it all because the next thing I did with my finances is actually buy my first place. I bought my place in downtown LA and I lived there for 12 years and I rode that wave of the downturn after, you know, ended
that's
up selling.
Also a super smart investment.
Yeah, so that's what I ended up doing financially. But as money started coming in from work, and you know, as I started ascending in my career, and you know, there was things like bonuses and like shares and stock options that were starting to come in, because when you first come into the profession, those are not available. You have to gain that with more tenure and more experience. I started thinking, okay, how do I pay off my student loans? So I paid off my USC student loan as quickly as I could. And believe it or not, like some other other state programs would be equivalent. I knew friends who were paying more in loans than I was, but I mean, I still needed to pay it off. So I focused on that. And then I shifted onto, okay, I want to go to grad school. That'll open more doors. But you know, with every single—
So you paid off your undergrad before you went to grad school?
I ended up paying, I would say 95% of it before grad school started.
That's amazing. Before you continue, if you wouldn't mind, because everything that you're saying is like, these are such smart investments already. And we'd love to, firstly, like maybe you can just introduce yourself in terms of your full name so people can look you up, but also your education, did that in fact help you to get to you where you're at now? Because it's one of those things where, yes, it seems like it did, but potentially to give hope to other people that maybe are not architects, but can be a little savvy with their money. Where did that intuition come from? If you can give us a little background on that.
I'm Bernadette Reyes-McDermott. I am the Vice President of Architecture and Design and Engineering for Public Storage. I oversee the national portfolio of 2,700 properties, which it keeps me busy. Actually, it's now 2,800 properties across 30 states. I went to undergrad at USC and I studied architecture and political science. And I navigated through architecture, went into the general construction. I did that. And then went to Austin Commercial as the director of pre-construction. So I was always in the front end budgets at that point. And then I came full circle onto the owner side, corporate side, managing the design. So that's where I'm at. But when it comes to the finances, it really comes down to my parents. I still remember getting my first checking account when I was 8 years old and my grandmother opening that up and, you know, showing me the value of money. And I remember my parents, especially my mom, like looking back, you know, hindsight is 2020, like when the times were tough, we had to make some compromises and we had to like count our money, making sure that we were being as smart as possible to stretch as much as we can to enjoy life that way. And that just resonated to me. And when it comes down to like being nimble and being, you know, having some grit and determination to do that, that comes from my family. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. The profession, I think, was the biggest eye-opening experience because my family didn't know what they didn't know. Like they didn't understand what FAFSA loans were or student loans or going to university here in the United States. It was just all completely different. So I was navigating and learning those ropes to a certain extent on my own. So, but the financial, like figuring things out, you know, I learned that the fundamental basics through my family and so, and I just was very important for me. I don't know
that's
if I answered your question.
And that's so, you did. And it's just, it's beautiful to hear that it can come from family and it is so important, even if you are the first one paving the way for the future, like, you know, it just takes one person to gather that knowledge and then start sharing it with the rest of the family so that everyone can thrive, right? And generationally, hopefully, you know, the end result is what we see here.
Yeah.
So that's fantastic. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
And if I may,
I was just going to ask, do you also juggle like family home as well?
I sure am.
You know, as a woman, I feel like we kind of have to do everything. So,
well, I think I kind of took the untraditional path. For the longest of time, I just did not want to date. I did not want to have a partner. I just like, I wanted to do a lot on my own. So by the time I actually wanted to have someone be in my life, I was a little bit more comfortable and established with my career. And that, so I was looking more for someone who I not only loved companionship, but a partner who saw me as an equal and not be intimidated. And that was actually the hardest part. And I, you know, he started off as a very close friend, colleagues, coworkers, friends, then we started dating and he never got intimidated. He sees me as a partner and I love him very much. I mean, he's my husband now. And you know, that partnership is what really outlined our family life. Like we welcomed, we now have a 13-month-old. Last year is 2021. So 2020, because we found out we were pregnant the start of this entire pandemic. So it was a huge, that was a whole different shift of things too. And, you know, we're both working remotely. We're both first-time parents. We're both like learning what this pandemic meant. There was no vaccinations. We were isolated. So we were working through all of that. And, you know, we looked at it like, how do we become partners in dealing with this? So he handles bedtime. I handle the morning routine, which I'm very thankful because by the end of the day, I'm very exhausted. We have to have outside support to help us out with like childcare during the work days. But like, I just learned to be flexible, especially like with other things. Like, okay, if the house isn't like, if the laundry is clean and the basket is not folded, you know, like, so be it. But like, you know, it's really coming down to having clear communication and splitting up the work. Like, he'll do the dishes, I'll take out the trash. There's like no gender rules. We just, okay, we just need to get it done when we need to get it done. But yeah, navigating through the ropes of parenthood, working full time and throwing this pandemic has been, it's been a curveball.
We could only imagine. I mean, the fact that you endured all of this in the beginning of the pandemic, I've had a few friends as well that, you know, their first pregnancies during it and then just like, oh, now you have to navigate this new normal, right? But it's so impressive the way you're handling it. And if I may tell the people that you're 40, which I love hearing like women doing what they're, like you just said, your career came first, you wanted to do other things. You had your own expectations. And Vera and I, we always talk about like partnerships within our, you know, relationships, because it's true. It's kind of the gender roles don't exist for us if we can establish what works for us. And it's usually a path that most people may not take, especially if you come from a culturally very machismo society, right? So it's kind of, for us, we're like, oh, that's not gonna work with us if we wanna make this house and life business balance work, right?
Well, what is interesting, you say the machismo, it's like, it's machismo, I think we coined it because of a Latino culture, that's what we expect. But you know what, machismo kind of translate to any single race or ethnicity, because it's called misogyny, it's called something else in a different culture, it's there. And there's certain expectations, like the wife cooks and cleans and stays at home. It's like, but realistically, it's just not possible. I mean, kudos for those who want to do that. I know I'm a better mother working
Oh yes, I love it. I love it.
And yeah, it's kind of, absolutely.
What's that saying I've heard two of my girlfriends say all the time to their kids is, I get to work, not that I have to work. And I think that's such a, just the word get, it makes such a big impact for a kid to hear that, right? Just kind of like, oh, they get to work and they love what they do. So I think it obviously shows you love what you do and your kid gets to pursue hopefully one day their own industry, right? So it's kind of really cool to see that.
Yeah, I could.
And what's it? Sorry, I was going to say, what's it been like? I mean, construction is not, it's also something that's not typical, I would say, for like, you know, in general, women moving into general construction. What's that been like for you? And what was it like for you when you first got into it versus where you're at now?
When I first got in, I mean, there was a lot of, well, it depends. I mean, like, I went to a larger national firm. The smaller firms, I'm still seeing that they struggle with women, in at least in the office side of things. Definitely out in the field supervision or in the laborers, electricians or carpenters. Definitely I see that in the smaller firms. And I see that in certain states, certain parts of the country, but in the larger national firm companies that are doing like large skyscrapers, hospitals, airports, there's a conscious decision to bring more women in. And when I first came on, there was a lot of women at the entry level and maybe trying to just pierce through the middle management, but there was a huge gap of middle management and executive leadership. I mean, there was just, it was non-existent. And either it was because people were family planning or they saw that their male colleagues were advancing more. There was not enough people in executive leadership roles to be, you know, have a seat at the table to advocate for women. And, you know, it's come a long way. And I look at those companies like, wow, they have a lot more women now in executive leadership. Those ones who stayed in or went back to the workforce are in upper middle management, executive leadership, and some of them are at the C-suite, which is fantastic. Is not that many. The majority of them are women of non-color. And if they are choosing color, it's almost like there's a level of tokenism still.
Yeah, like it's just part of like the, it looks good on the marketing, right? For sure.
Yeah, well, or like you start seeing the same faces over and over and over again. So like,
thank you, and please make sure to subscribe and leave your comments and reviews. To learn more about the podcast, check out the website and Instagram, Financially Savvy in 20 Minutes, and watch interviews on YouTube and IGTV. To become a sponsor or hire us for your next workshop or speaking engagement, please visit financiallysavvyin20minutes.com. All it takes is 20 minutes daily to become financially savvy. Music by Nikki and produced by Robert DeLude.